Architects believe their visions can change the world, and of course every architect has her or his own sense of design. Christopher Alexander is an architect and theorist who believes each one of us is best able to design the spaces we use, an idea that provokes a lot of traditional architects. Alexander and his associates have recognized a set of patterns, such as the way light comes into a room or the shape of the room itself, that he says humans prefer and intuitively recognize, but have been discouraged from expressing. Alexander describes his views in a series of 6 books published by Oxford University Press, including A Pattern Language, The Oregon Experiment, and A New Theory of Urban Design. Since 1963, he's been a professor of architecture at the University of California in Berkeley. Alexander has applied his theories to many projects, including low-cost housing in Mexicali, a combined Japanese high school and college outside Tokyo, private homes in the Bay Area, and most recently, a homeless shelter in San Jose. I asked him how he first came up with the idea of defining our relationship to space.
There's a simple fact one can't get away from, and that is that people all over the world, for all human cultures virtually, until a few years ago, knew how to make beautiful environments, made beautiful houses, towns, cities, so forth. So I came to the conclusion, after looking at a lot of anthropological stuff and so forth, that really it was happening because they were just following simple rules. I mean, there were certain ways to do things which worked out very well. So I naturally became curious about what those might be. And then started simply a series of observations as to the conditions under which we really do feel comfortable. I mean, if I take a thing like, for instance, light on 2 sides of every room, you'd find lots of people nowadays who will say, well, I feel completely comfortable in a room maybe without windows, or I feel fine in a room that has the windows on one end or something like that. And of course, at one level of comfort, that's perfectly true. At the deeper level, in other words, if I say, well, I'm looking for the conditions under which you feel very, very fine, that is, you feel calm in yourself and you feel wholesome, then it will turn out that in the room which has the light coming from 2 sides, there is a completely different level of experience of one's own wholeness, one's own life, liveliness.
I've certainly found that idea of having a window on each side of the room or on 2 sides of the room important, and I've noticed if you go to a motel or a condominium unit or even at a resort somewhere, it seems that it's been expedient that there are just windows on one side of the room, even on the rooms that are at the ends of the buildings where you think there could be another window put in on the side. It's not put in. What is it that drove these kind of common sense attitudes out of the world of conventional architecture?
Well, that's a very subtle question. I first of all, I do want to emphasize what you've said, which is this is common sense. It's sort of, it's really knowledge that everybody has. Everybody knows it, has it in their own body. And one of the reactions to the book that my colleagues and I wrote is sort of, my gosh, I knew this all along, but I never knew that I knew it. So as you say, the question is, well, how in the hell did it ever get forgotten? Why aren't people doing it? The answer is complicated. First of all, the world is being made by very largely by developers at the moment. Obviously, the primary motive there is money. There isn't a really concerted effort to try and make the environment comfortable. And it's the first time in human history that the environment has been made by groups of people that are so remote from the people that are actually experiencing and using the environment. So that's the first part of the answer. I think, secondly, architecture, since maybe, I don't know, 1920 or something like that, has been in a state that one could almost describe as a sort of mass psychosis or something. I mean, architects have had a really weird vision of the world, which they've essentially foisted on others. And it's sort of like if you don't appreciate it, you're not in the know and you're foolish somehow. They're private. It's a kind of a private club, and it is not anchored in common, ordinary, deep feeling that we all share.
You worked with some villagers in Mexico to help build their own houses.
Yes.
And I suppose that for many governments, the expedient solution to low-cost housing is to put up a concrete tower, some kind of building that eventually becomes a vertical slum.
Yes.
How did you work differently with these villagers in Mexico?
Well, what we did was that we essentially constructed a kind of pattern language for the houses and for the group space that was involved in these houses. We then asked each family to lay out their own space for themselves. It was laid out directly on the ground. I mean, we simply did it by hammering sticks into the ground after they had an idea how they wanted their house to be and where the garden was and where the front door was and where the living room was and how everything worked. So then the construction started on the basis of the stakes that were put in the ground. And, of course, the families also played quite a big role in actually helping to build their houses. Some of the work was done professionally. Some was done by the families, which made the houses a lot cheaper. That particular project, I think you've got the book about it, that was built in 1976, and the houses cost $3,500 each, a house of about 700 square feet.
And if somebody walked into one of these houses, what would the feeling be compared to walking into a house that may have been built by conventional methods?
I think the first reaction would be, it must have been here a long time. It feels like an old house, not because it's quaint or because it's got any sort of archaic style, but simply because it has a type of informality and a relationship to the human being which is not typical of developer-built architecture. So instead of feeling like a rather cold, artificial skeleton box thing around you, it actually feels like a normal house.
You mentioned that you developed a pattern language with the people in this village in Baja California.
Mm-hmm.
What were the patterns that you found and then incorporated in the design?
Well, they were quite sort of ordinary things. I mean, there was a need for some space outside the houses where people could barbecue and have parties. There's a small space sort of shared by several houses. Important desire for a kind of, this has happened to be a very, very hot place, you know, 105, 110 degrees often. So very strong desire by virtually all the families to have a big porch of some sort where the breeze could blow through and where they could get in the shade in the very hot weather. Something like an American family room, but somewhere much more concentrated. I mean, a sort of small spot right around the table, which would actually be the core and focus of family life in a Mexican family of that kind. Lots of different things like this. Many of these patterns are sort of almost universal, but they have cultural variants. That is, in each culture and each subculture, you'll find some version of it, which is not exactly the same that'll arise in another culture, but on the other hand, the sort of broad nature of it is similar.
You've brought your ideas to bear with the construction of a shelter for the homeless in San Jose.
Yes.
How so? Did you go through the same sort of interview process?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. The first thing I did was to sit down with... The client was a nonprofit organization in San Jose, and I said, look, if we're going to do this, first thing you've got to do is I want to find a whole bunch of representatives of the homeless community, sit down with them in the place where we're going to build this building, and let's have some discussion about what's really going on. And... of course, the essence of the whole building is that a homeless person is just that. In other words, it's not a mental defective or a drunk or something, but it's just a person like you and me that happens not to have a roof over his head and therefore has the feelings are very, very fundamental. I'll give you an example. One of the first things that some of them said was, the problem is the people that run these shelters. They're the problem, not the solution, because essentially they tend to make a kind of prison out of them. And what you must have is... dignity and privacy and so forth. As a result of those kind of considerations, I'm just giving one example. The beds in this shelter, each bed is in its own alcove. So the people, when you get inside that alcove, it's just a plain, ordinary thing. I mean, it just cost a few bucks. In other words, I'm not talking about some fancy thing. But inside it, you feel that you are in your own world. And even though you're under all that pressure, you're probably afraid like hell, you know, I mean, you haven't got any money, you don't know where you're going, you don't know where you're going to be 2 weeks from now or even tomorrow, but actually you have that world of your own that makes you comfortable.
You've been working on a project with Herman Miller designing furniture for office spaces.
Yes.
I've seen some of the designs for offices that you have helped people design for themselves, and the sense that I get when people sit down to think about their workspace, it often turns out, once they've finished the design, to look utterly unconventional and utterly comfortable. What's going on there?
Very same thing that we've just been talking about. Each person works differently. People have got their own notions about work, about the comfort of work, and so forth. Obviously, what a corporation ought to do is to make it possible for people to really get some work done. That means allowing people to lay out their own space and so forth. The whole system that we are in the process of doing for Herman Miller has that ability and is entirely different from a series of mass-produced cubicles where you assume that it's a mechanical operation. You know, here's a desk, here's a computer, here's a chair, and so forth, and that if you repeat that mechanical configuration 25 times, then somehow people are going to be able to get some work done. It on a mechanistic level, it has something to do with work. On a serious, deep human level, it has nothing to do with work. What we've tried to do is to make a system which encourages and supports and sustains and nourishes the real work that people do and the real the way people actually are.
Do you practice all your rules in your own house?
Pretty much. Come and visit sometime. Yes, I think you'd find so.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.